Testing, 1, 2, 3. Okay. Very good afternoon to all, brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So today is the 5th of November, 2016, Sunday. We are now at the 61st lesson of the 6th Paitriya Platform Sutta. Okay, before we start, we will do the puja. Let us compose our mind, develop our faith, sadha, virya, then mindfully, we shall commence our puja. Namo Bhansi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Bhansi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Bhansi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Bhansi Namo Bhansi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Quan Sing Pusa. Namo Quan Sing Pusa. Namo Quan Sing Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Arahang Sama Sambuto Bhagawa Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi. Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namasami. Supatipanno Bhagavato Sauka Sango Sanghang Namami. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhassa. Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. Dhammang Saranang Gacchami. Sanghang Saranang Gacchami. Dityampi Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. Dityampi Dhammang Saranang Gacchami. Dityampi Sanghang Saranang Gacchami. Tatiyampi Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. Tatiyampi Dhammang Saranang Gacchami. Tatiyampi Sanghang Saranang Gacchami. Panati pata veramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Adina dana veramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Kamesu michachara veramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Musawada veramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Surameraya maca pakma datana veramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect mindfully to Triple Jam. Buddhang Pujhemi. Dhammang Pujhemi. Sanghang Pujhemi. Okay, you can be seated. Testing. 1, 2, 3. Okay. Miss Lee. Okay. Turn to page 299. Huh? We are at 299. Huh? But before we start, we will go through the verse for opening the sutta. We turn to the verse for opening the sutta, just before the forward, the page before the forward. Verse for opening a sutta. The unsurpassed, profound and wonderful Dhamma is difficult to encounter in hundreds of millions of aeons. I now see and hear it, receive and uphold it, and I vow to fathom the Tathagata's true meaning. Okay, then we can turn the page 299. But before that, we will go through page 298. We just go through it so that we understand what was the last topic that we covered. Page 298. Ji Chang bow and thank the master and serve him till the end of master's life. Then we go through the commentaries by Master Xuanhua. So according to Xuanhua, he said, the master said, Ji Chang, the Dhamma doesn't even have one vehicle, much less four vehicle. So this one we have gone through. It is the human mind that divided the teaching into the four vehicle. So a lot of people fail to understand. So they thought Buddhism got a lot of sect. What we have actually defined under the Buddhist tradition is they finally subdivide Buddhism into three basic division or Buddhist sect. First is the Theravada, or they call it the Xiaochen in Mahayana term, the smaller vehicle. Then they have the Mahayana, the larger vehicle. Then we have the Vajrayana, supposed to be the esoteric teaching. Then these three define Buddhism. But according to Mahayana, they subdivide into four. And there are four vehicle. If you have the what they call true understanding, you will understand why they classify it into four. They are the various stages of cultivation. Stage one is like the Theravada teaching. It's teaching you the basic wisdom to realize the sainthood way. So basic wisdom consists of what they call hearing or listening. Then nowadays you can read up on it. And you can reflect and contemplate too. So that will give you the initial wisdom. Then after that, you move on to develop the cultivation. Then when you cultivate, you awaken. You will realize the various stages of sainthood way. Sotapan, Sakadagami, Anagami. Then you have the Arahan stage, Arahanta ship. Then after that, if you continue to cultivate and take the Bodhisattva way and continue your cultivation, then you develop what they call the Bodhisattva way or the supreme vehicle. Then finally, when you perfect all the 10 perfections, you become a Sammasambuddha. The consummate of the Bodhisattva way is called the ultimate. The ultimate vehicle, the fourth one. The fourth one, they call it by the name, what is it? They have it here, Supreme. Supreme Vahika. So I read through the commentary, you will understand. Huh? The master said, Chichang, the Dhamma doesn't even have one Vahika, much less the four created by the human mind. People's minds are what differ. If you hear, see, and recite, you belong to the small Vahika. So those who don't understand the real cultivation, when they start off by developing, like what I mentioned, the hearing part. See means you read. Then you recite the sutta. So this is using the thought mundane. So this belongs to the small vehicle, like the ordinary Theravada cultivator. Then if you understand and awaken, after you put it to practice, you belong to the middle vehicle, means the later stage of sainthood, realization within the Theravada tradition. Then if you practice in accordance with Dhamma, you belong to the great vehicle, means if you go the Bodhisattva way, takes the vow and follow the teaching, you will develop the great vehicle. So from small, middle to great. Then when you have understood all Dhammas, when they are perfected in your own mind ground without any obstruction, and when you know that the 10,000 Dhammas are the mind, and the mind is the 10,000 Dhamma, as I mind is the forerunner of all things, mind is chief. When mind arise, everything arise. Then there's a famous mind, and I say, 一切一切为心造, means 心造成的. That's the reason why everything arises from the mind. And further, when you are not defiled by any state, then you belong to the supreme vehicle, means the Sammasambuddha vehicle. But you must cultivate on your own. I cannot do it for you. So that is always the message from the Buddha. Even Six Patria also same. 个人吃饭,个人饱. So if you want to realize the enlightenment, you have to cultivate yourself and develop the awakening. People cannot do for you. So like the wisdom, the understanding, the Buddha cannot give it to you. If can, he would have been the most compassionate living being in the world. He will give it to you. But he can't. He can only explain this to you, show you the way. And you have to cultivate yourself. That's why you have to track the path yourself. Then our Buddhist hymn also is mentioned in one of the hymns. You always hear, Buddha merely showed the way. And before that, you yourself must walk the path. Buddha merely showed the way. So this teaching comes from him. You have to understand it, put it to practice, and realize it. Then the analogy that Six Patria always give, and also I think Xianhua like to use this, is eat your own food and feel yourself. If I eat on your behalf, you don't feel full, understand? You will still be hungry. But if you eat yourself, you will get your nutrient, your food, in accordance. That's why there is a famous Mandarin saying, 个人吃饭,个人饱. Then you have to end your own birth and death. Means this form and mind must realize the wisdom, the awakening. And through that, cease. Then there is no more rebirth consciousness. That's how you end birth and death of the segmented form and mind. Means you don't have to come back to this existential world anymore. There is no more becoming. So that is for those who died deluded or ignorant. If you pass away with delusion or ignorance, then the rebirth consciousness is there. Then you got no choice. You have to come. Karmically, the law of karma will create rebirth consciousness for you. And you got no choice. You have to come. But for those who go the Bodhisattva way, they don't have to come. They can choose to come under different stages of condition that they have developed through their own understanding or through their own vows. So that is the part on cultivation, ending birth and death. From that time on, Chi Chang served the master. When he wanted a cup of tea, Chi Chang brought it for him. When he was hungry, Chi Chang brought him food. He served the master right up till the master's death, at which time he also left Nan Hua Temple. So this is a very, very fellow piety disciple of the six patriarchs. And he really, really had faith in what the patriarch taught him. Then he vowed to serve him till the end of his life. Okay. Then we turn to page 299, which is the next chapter. This one is the section involving Bishu Zitao. Tao, Zitao. Yeah, Zitao, is it? Oh, 自己的字, okay, 知道. Bishu Zitao, a native of Nanhai in Guangzhou, asked a favor. Since leaving home, your student has studied the Nirvana Sutta for over 10 years and has still not understood its great purpose or purport. I hope that the High Master will bestow his instruction. Master said, what point hasn't you understood? 知道, replied. All activities are impermanent, characterized by production and extinction. When production and extinction are extinguished, that still extinction is bliss. My Dao are with respect to this passage. So this is from the Sutta. This particular monk, Zitao, he wants to understand this part of the Sutta. The Sutta is about Nirvana Sutta. Nirvana Sutta is the Enlightenment Sutta. Or in Mahayana, they call it Nipan Jing. I think in the Theravada tradition, they also had this. They call it the Parinibbana Sutta. So we go on with the commentary by Xuan Huang. Once in the past, during the period when Sakyamuni Buddha was cultivating to plant causes for the attainment of Buddhahood, he was a Brahmin or a Brahman. Deep in the mountain, he cultivated many Dhammadol. So he heroically that the King Saka was moved and said, he worked so hard, I wonder if I can break him. And he transformed himself into a Rakshasa ghost to test the Brahman. He told him, the Buddha known as free from fear said, all activities are impermanent, characterized by production and extinction. Who say that? Said the Brahmin. The Rakshasa ghost, who was hideously ugly, appeared and said, I was just quoting a verse spoken by the Buddha, who is fear, free from fear. But you didn't recite the entire verse, only the first half. Please complete it, said the Brahmin. I don't have the energy because I haven't eaten for several days. Find me something to eat and I will speak it for you, the ghost said. What would you like, said the Brahmin. I don't eat anything but flesh, warm human flesh, said the ghost. In that case, replied the Brahmin, you may speak the verse and then I will give you my own body to eat. The ghost stared at him. Can you really do such an awesome deed? Can you really give up your body for half a verse? I speak the truth. I do not lie, said the Brahmin. And if you don't believe me, I can ask the Buddha and of the Ten Directions to bear testimony to the fact. Now recite the verse, and then I will feed you. The ghost quickly recited, all activities are impermanent, characterized by production and extinction. When production and extinction are extinguished, that still extinction is bliss. Now give me your body. Then the Brahmin said, wait a minute. Once you have eaten me, there will be nothing left of the verse, unless I write it down. Let me carve it on this tree, so that future generations may cultivate according to it. Then he stripped the bark from a tree and carved the verse on its trunk. The ghost said, can I eat you now? Just a minute, said the Brahmin. So you are backing out, are you? The ghost said. No, I am not, said the Brahmin. But what I have written on the tree will eventually be worn away by the wind and rain. I want to carve the verse in stone so that it will last forever. I will gladly give you my body, but I must also leave the Buddha Dhamma for those of the future. Not a bad idea, said the ghost. The Brahmin carved the words in stone and said, all right, I have done it. What I had to do, I have done what I had to do. I will give my body to you as an offering. You may eat me now. And he shut his eyes and waited for the ghost to devour him. But just then, the ghost flew up into empty space, transformed himself back to Sakka and said, very good, very good. You are a true cultivator, one who gives up your own body for the sake of the Buddha way. In the future, you are sure to become a Buddha. This is an event in a former life of Sakyamuni Buddha, when as a Brahmin, he offered his life for half a verse. So this was Chen Hua's commentary. Yeah? But coming back to the verse, maybe we can discuss it. Eh? What is your understanding? Yeah? We read the verse together. Huh? All activities are impermanent. What do you think of this sentence? Does it hold true? Yes. So how do you understand it? All activities are impermanent. What you mean by activities? You have to develop the understanding so that all this understanding can stabilize. All activities are impermanent. So here, activity means, what does activity here means? Yeah? What is activity? Everything you do or experience in life is your activity. Right? So what you have? You have three types of activity. Yeah? Physical. Mental and nature's. Activity. So these are the three main activity in existence that you can sum up the whole of life. Means all physical things that you do are called physical activity. Then everything that goes through the mind, they are your mental activity. Let's give example of physical activity. Very easy there. Standing, walking, sitting, lying down. These are physical activity. Then all the movement that you make with your physical body, your bending, stretching, turning, or whatever you do. Yeah. These are physical activity. activity, or we call it physical phenomena. Then mental activity, you can arise a lot. Your thought process, your feeling, your perception, all these are from the mind. Your seeing consciousness, hearing consciousness, smell, taste, tactile, and thought consciousness. These are all mental activity. Your sankhara movement, your perception, your various type of mental states or mental intention. Then everything that you develop through the mental, which is your mind. Mind got two types, mundane and the supramundane. Or the thinking mind, mundane mind, conditioned arising mind, and the true mind. So mental activity comes from the mundane mind, the thinking mind, the conditioned arising mind. This is where the five aggregate of form and mind constantly arise and pass away. Then nature's phenomena, everything else within nature, they have their own activity. Like the plants, they have their own activity, the birds, the animals, everything. Within nature, see the chirping of the bird. And whatever vibration, could be traffic or anything, or nature's vibration, the flowing water, the weather, the wind, the rain, the thunder, and all this, they are all nature's activity. So according to this sutta, Nibbana Sutta, the Buddha say, all activity are impermanent. So definitely this is a very powerful statement in it, and you will be able to conclude that it's the truth. But how do you understand that they are all impermanent? Impermanent means what? What is impermanent here? Of course, you can tell me the English meaning, the meaning of the word. It's not permanent. But how do you look at all this activity? Does it really appeal to you, or can you develop the understanding that they are all impermanent? How can you understand that they are impermanent? Like this table. This is part of nature's phenomena. The Buddha said this table is impermanent. This building is impermanent. How do you understand it? The tree outside you see is impermanent. Everything within nature that you can come to perceive is all impermanent. So how do you reconcile? Is this table permanent? Why? Why you say no? It has been here for so long, isn't it? Use the mic. Finally, of course, it can get damaged. So this one is through rational thinking, or logical mind. But a more penetrative understanding is needed. It's not just, let our brother Hung.
The so-called activity is something as a beginning and end, and is conditioned depending. As a condition, this thing will change also.
That's why
it's called impermanent.
Very good, sadhu. So you have to understand it the way Brother Hung mentioned. Because every activity that arises, there are conditions behind their arising. So this condition arising state is very important. Condition arising activity. What happened to the support? Oh, drop off. Where is the sheet of paper for this one? When they pull in and pull out, I think drop off. You get me a piece of paper, fold it up in. Because otherwise it's going to make a lot of sound. Okay. Fold it one more time. Fold it one more time. I think not enough. You need another piece. Yeah. Okay. That would be good. Okay, good. Thank you. So condition arising activity are very important. There are causes and conditions that are required for things to manifest. Because our world is an existential world, condition arising world. That's why the Buddha mentioned very clearly, whatever that is of the nature to arise is of the nature to cease. Then whatever that happened, the Buddha said, there are always causes and conditions behind. So these causes and conditions behind is very important. So condition arising activity depends on condition. On condition. So when there is condition for it to arise, it will arise. When the condition cease, the activity of phenomena will cease. Just like my voice. How does this voice that I spoke arise? And how is it that you are able to hear it, perceive it? I need to speak, isn't it? These are the conditions, and there must be a mic. The microphone goes into the player connected, and the voice is magnified. Then you can hear it through the vibration, the condition. Then you must have an ear organ that functions. So all these are the conditions necessary for hearing, for perceiving my voice, for the arising of this speech. So these are the conditions. The moment I stop saying anything, what happened? This one ceased to be. Now you can see. That's why whatever that is condition arising is always impermanent. Because condition is always impermanent. It come and it go. It continuously change. It's in a state of flux. You know what is flux? Very fast. In fact, a deeper way to look into it is this table, if you are a science student, you will know. It appears solid, very rigid, like very permanent, lasting. But do you know that the atoms, the elements within, they are constantly vibrating? The electron, the protons, the neutron, everything. Then all the microscopic things, they are always in a state of flux. But they are being bound together by forces. Atomic nature, subatomic nature. Then this vibration or this state of condition of this table is only stable under our atmospheric pressure. Let's say you burn it, what happened? When you burn this table, what happened? It will burn it, because it's made of wood, isn't it? Then the condition that sustain it into a wood form is gone. Even water. You say water is stable at room temperature, but you heat it up to boiling point, 100 degrees Celsius, what happened? It becomes steam, isn't it? Do you understand? The temperature cannot go up higher because that is the boiling point. After that, it becomes steam. So when conditions cease to be, water ceases to be. Then steam, the heat is generated through the steam. So when you have sufficient heat, then it becomes steam. Then after the steam, it goes into the atmosphere as vapor, water vapor and all those things. Then the temperature cool down. Then what happens is all this will follow a cycle through the atmospheric movement, weather movement. All this cold air will rise. Hot air will rise, cold air will descend. Then as they arise, they become denser and denser and denser. They accumulate to become clouds. Then when it reaches the dew point, then it will rain and all those things. That's how the condition arising state creates the evolution of nature. So water, steam, and even ice or snow is a very good example, because these are the same material, except they take different physical form when the heat content is different. When you take away the heat, water, once below 0 degrees Celsius, and you take away the heat, it will freeze. It will become ice or snow. Then you heat it up, it will melt and become water. Then you heat it further, it will become steam. That's why it flows from state to state dependent on condition. So the permanent state is when the conditions are stable, then it appears that this stable is permanent, very stable. But when the condition for its stability is no more, like when you heat it up, or there is a major fire or what, it is gone. The other way is to chop it up or destroy it. Or somebody steal it, then it's gone. That's why you say impermanent. It come and it go, dependent on condition. So when condition for its existence is no more, it will cease to be. Like this building. If let's say finally one day, the government decide to acquire, gone. Or somebody decide to sell, again, it change ownership. Then they do the renovation and all those things. So these are the conditions that is possible. So when you understand condition, you understand impermanent. Then you look at your own physical body, the physical phenomena. Each and every aspect of the physical phenomena, they are in a state of flux, ever changing. Can you realize that? Especially if you are a cultivator, meditator. Because this physical body and mind is like a phenomena which lasts so long, you have been like deceived most of the time or deluded by it. Yeah, you take it for granted. But you can never deny, since birth until now, this physical body and mind of yours has changed and transformed radically over the years, because it takes time. Then you don't realize what is happening. So the other way to perceive it as impermanent is when you silence your mind and meditate, what happens? What happened? What do you realize? Within your own form and mind, is there anything that is permanent? You say, shake your head means no, but you have to understand it. If you cannot understand it, it's still knowledge. It's not an understanding. What is it within your form and mind that you can develop the understanding that is impermanent? You must be able to express it out. Otherwise, brother, again, let him try. Very good, sadhu.
Brother, as I understand, the so-called impermanent, anything that can change. So, any form which we can see, or hear or touch, they are changing. They cannot stay on forever.
Correct.
And for example, those our lifespan.
Yeah. How long you live? Huh?
Period of time.
Yeah.
So we do not realize. Mm. However, from Buddha's point of view.
Yeah, yeah.
It is so long. If you talk, you know,
yeah.
We are nothing.
Yeah, yeah, correct.
And even any form, however big it is, any form, like a galaxy, it is far enough. Yeah, very small.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Comparatively,
so,
yes.
In Buddha's teaching, the any merit which we think is big.
Yeah.
Merit is very big, means it has no form. That's what the sutra inside implements.
Yeah, that aspect is good. Is there anything else that can make you feel that this whole thing, the physical body and mind, is completely impermanent, not really permanent? When you silence your mind and you feel your body, what do you feel?
The thing I feel is that they are not...
No, whatever you feel.
They are changing, but it is so small, the change.
Correct, when you are completely silent, you can feel the vibration within your physical body.
Correct.
Your vibration, your heartbeat, everything. And if you are silent, truly mindful, you can feel them. Means the cells are alive. Understand? The cells are pulsating, and they follow your heartbeat's rhythm, if you can follow, because the blood has a flow, the pressure. Yeah. So all of your vibration within your physical body, even your heartbeat, these are your life force. And these are the vibration that come from the pumping of your heart. That's why they are alive, active. They are constantly appearing and disappearing. Then if you are sensitive, you can feel. They are sweating, perspiring. Then you have your breathing going on. Your breath moves in and out. Then your brain activity, your feeling, your perception, like he mentioned just now. Everything you see, they come and they go. Everything you hear, they come and they go. Perception also, feeling also. So everything that you can experience within the physical body, the vibration, the pulse of life, the breath, the perception, the activity of mind, the feeling, the mental formation, or whatever. You come to realize that all these are actively in a state of flux, constantly arising and passing away. So how can this summation of all this be permanent? We are on the physical sense, physical level. You can feel that every aspect of the form and mind is in a state of flux, arising, passing away, arising, passing away. That's why when you suddenly develop through meditative understanding, this physical and mental activity and nature's activity become very clear to you. Everything you come to perceive is in a state of flux. Condition arising, dependent originating. That's why we call it by a different name. Causal phenomenal. Yeah. Off the mic, I think. Still on it. Ah, okay. Yeah. So this causal phenomenal means whatever phenomena that arise because of causes, they are impermanent. That's why causal phenomena, they are impermanent. So within the condition world, every phenomena that arise, there are causes and conditions behind. That's why we call it causal phenomena. Yeah. Then they are dependent originating, or condition arising. So this one, dependent originating or condition arising. Dependent originating. So this is what meditation is all about. When you can be mindful, sensitive, and silent, then you can feel all this and you can understand all this. Then you will come to a clear understanding, and sometimes when you are completely silent and aware, when the condition is ready with the necessary wisdom or understanding already ripened, suddenly your silent mind will insight into phenomena and awaken to the universal characteristics of impermanence. This is a universal characteristic. Characteristic. So this universal characteristic is very powerful. The moment you understand, you will awaken. Characteristic. Yeah? Universal characteristic. The moment you understand that they are impermanent, straight away you will know that it leads to suffering. Can you, through deduction, deduce it? If they are impermanent, it will lead to suffering. If you cannot understand that, means you have not really contemplated, you have not really reflected, you have not really developed the stability of wisdom. Why is it when this is understood, especially the characteristics of impermanence, then the second universal characteristics of suffering or dukkha is straight away understood? If you cannot do that, means you still have not developed the understanding of the cultivation. You have not contemplated deep enough. Of course, the third universal characteristic also become automatic. So from suffering, you will come to understand why in this world, when you go through life existence, because of this universal characteristics of impermanence, suffering will be the result if you are deluded. If you cannot see this truth clearly, then you will suffer. So by now you should understand it. I've given you the hint already. All activities are impermanent, means all things, all phenomena are impermanent. In fact, this word, a better word, should be phenomena. Let's take, for example, this physical body. If this physical body is impermanent, how can it lead to suffering? Because you deludedly cling onto it, grasp onto it, and think that this fellow is you, and so on. Your loved one is you. But this one, the Buddha says, is impermanent. Means what? The physical body is impermanent. Means it goes the way of nature. Nature's law will make sure it goes through birth, old age, sickness, and death. And these are realities of life and existence. Because of this law, it's impermanent. That's why it will go the way of nature. It follows nature's law. If you want it to stay forever young, don't get old, and don't get sick, means don't die, it's impossible. True or not? So when you deludedly grasp onto it, thinking that it's you, and you don't want it to get old, get sick, and die, then you develop suffering. When this physical body goes the way of nature, when it gets sick, you become afflicted, miserable. When you go through old age, you cannot accept the reality of your physical body failing you. The senses starts to fail you. Then the physical part starts to fail you. Then the mental part starts to fail you. Then when you attach to this form and mind, you will develop suffering. That's how this truth will free you from suffering. But if you don't understand this, you cling through delusion, suffering will arise. Because this is nature's law. That's why he used the word all activity or phenomena, they are impermanent. You want it otherwise, which is not nature's way, what happened to you? Yeah? You will become afflicted, isn't it? Miserable, yeah. You will suffer, isn't it? Then if you were to look deeper into it, because of impermanence, you will also come to realize the other universal characteristic. This is one of the three universal characteristics. So this is the second one. And this is the third one. So this one is non-self or anatta nature. Anatta nature. Because if it's impermanent, like your physical body, then how can it be a self? Because if it's a self, it should be something permanent, isn't it? And because it's not a permanent, unchanging entity, how can it call it a self? This is me, this is I. Therefore, I exist and I can own things. No, this is a delusion. This form of mind by itself is impermanent. Condition arising. That's why I always say karmically conditioned out for you to come to this world. So if it is itself condition arising, causal phenomena is impermanent. It will come, it will go. Then when it go, you mean you die? It's only the form of mind dispersed. No one die, nobody die. And you are not that thing. That is how the teaching is been understood. And when the Buddha realized that, his problem no more, because he left the palace in search for truth to have the answer to getting old, getting sick and die, where he saw the four signs, the first three, a sick man, an old man, then a dead man. When he reflected on all this, he said, I got a problem. I don't have the answer to old age, sickness and death. When this physical body go that way, I will not have any answer. I will still become afflicted, miserable. Well, he thought that body is what he is. But later on, after he meditated, he came to realize this universal characteristic of impermanence. Then he realized that the physical body and mind is not him. That's why the five aggregate of form and mind is not him. Because it's impermanent. It will go the way of nature. It will disperse. When condition ceases to be, it ceases to be. Like this table, gone. You don't say this table dies. My voice, when I stop saying anything, ceases to be. You don't say my voice dies. And you didn't label it as my voice was born. But it arises through the same condition, similar condition. When condition is there, it arises, exists already. When condition continues to sustain itself, then as long as I continue to speak, the voice exists. But the moment I stop, it ceases to be. So this one you don't call birth and death. But human life, animal life, fish life, and all this you call birth and death. And there is the delusion when you cannot see it and understand it. So understanding impermanence is very important. It's the source of all wisdom. When wisdom is realized, the penetrative understanding is impermanent. The moment you awaken to impermanence, you will understand the other two universal characteristics. It's almost like automatic. Yeah. It's very fast. The moment you awaken to these universal characteristics of impermanent or anicchang, then suffering, non-self or empty nature, dukkhang and anatta will be understood immediately. So cultivation, if you have done it correctly, you will have this understanding. Then from then onward, you will live life differently. You will no longer be like an ordinary puttajana or an enlightened being. You don't have that type of delusion anymore. You will not cling, you will not hold, you will see things differently. Then when you understand that everything is impermanent, empty, not real, you are not whole, you are not cling, you are not grasp, then your mind liberates, free. Then it enters another dimension, another stage of understanding that transforms the form and mind. The form and mind that has this understanding become completely different, liberated. Then it will know if there is condition for it to arise, and if during that period where it sustains you, you can use it, use it. Then when condition cease to be, so be it. Because that thing is not you. So every physical thing, nature's thing, that arise, if there is condition for you to own them, even temporarily, the form and mind, like you own them, you must understand they arise because of condition. So when conditions cease to be, they will separate from you or disappear from you. So this is the reality. If you understand this, you will not be afflicted. You will have the wisdom to accept it because it's nothing. When there is condition to have, I have. Like good food, I eat. I will have a good meal, Arasara. If you are so foolish as to follow what these people tell you, say, no, I'm spiritual, no, I'm a cultivator, I must not have craving. And then he said, eating good food is craving. And then you don't eat, you pass it to me, I eat. That is not craving. The Buddha said, you must not attach to good food, understand? No? Attachment is suffering. If you don't attach, if there is condition for you to have, why not? Like money, wealth, whatever, if it comes through the proper condition, following nature's law, you don't cheat, you don't deceive, you don't kill, harm, and do all those things that violate the moral rule to get it, then it is allowable. And sometimes it's through your own understanding, you reap what you sow. So if you have the parami of generosity, wealth will come to you. So with this understanding, you can live life. You don't have to go and steal, rob, deceive, and cheat to get money or wealth. They will come to you naturally through nature's law. Because these are the seed, the condition that you have planted. You plant the seed of virtue, generosity, wholesomeness, goodness. You will reap the fruit of wholesomeness. That's why in the Mahayana teaching, the Mandarin is very good. 种因结果. So you have to plant the seed of goodness. 种善因结善果. 种恶因结恶果. You plant the seed of evil, you will reap the fruit of evil. You will suffer. You will become afflicted, miserable. And you reap what you sow. 种因结果. So the advice is, even from Master Xuanhua, is the same. He always tell the disciple and those people whom he know. He said, you have to be careful. Don't ever plant the seed of evil. Plant the wrong seed and reap the wrong fruit. 千万要小心, he always say, 众生千万要小心, 千万不要种错因结错果. You plant the wrong seed, you will reap the wrong fruit. Then don't blame anybody for what happened later on in your subsequent life or your whatever existence that you arise. So these are the teaching that you have to understand. When you understand that they are impermanent because they are conditioned arising, so you have to plant the seed of wholesomeness, virtue, and wisdom for you to reap the right fruit. That's the reason why the advice of the Buddha is avoid all evil, do good. Means avoid planting the seed of evil. Develop goodness, wholesomeness. Then purify your mind. Cultivate wisdom. If you do that, you will have good life. Your mind will liberate. Every life you come, condition will be there for you to have this understanding. And you will become beautiful. Yeah. Your life will become beautiful. Meaningful. It's like you are very blessed. You know, how is it like to be a blessed person? Blessed in every aspect of life. They always, during Chinese New Year, they wish you all the good things. Good life, good health, prosperity, and all those things. Then sometimes they say, all your good and noble wish come true. So if you don't plant the seed of wholesomeness, goodness, wisdom and understanding, you wish alone, you go and wish, it will never come true. But if you have planted the seed of wholesomeness, goodness, virtue and wisdom, no need to wish, it will come to you. You understand? So all this Chinese New Year greeting, I tell you, wish you long life, good health and what. You don't have the karma, sorry, it won't happen. Understand? But this is just somebody's wish. So for this pure wish to really manifest, they will know how to express it differently. They will invoke the power of merits for causes and conditions to allow you to have the good life and all those things. But sometimes your karmic friction come and obstruct what is being wished. That's why if you don't take care of karma, to me, your life is already like predicted. Nothing much can change unless you are willing to learn this teaching, develop the understanding, and from moment to moment plant the correct seed or condition for future good karma to arise. The whole of the teaching is just understanding this. If you don't train yourself, develop the understanding, develop the mindfulness, the heedfulness to avoid all evil, do good, and purify your mind through meditation, your life will be miserable, afflicted. Then we go on to the second, what they call, the second line, the second verse. All activities are impermanent, followed by, characterized by production and extinction. So these are very important. Characterize. By production and extinction. I think this one easy to understand. Production means arising, because it's been produced. So production is arising. When conditions are there, it will arise. Then when conditions cease to be, it will cease. That's an extinction. That's why everything arise and pass away. They come and they go. Even your breath is the same. The in and out breath. The arising and passing away of each and every breath. Your footstep also same. Every step you move, there is a birth and death. So this is the birth and death. Birth and death. Or the coming and the going. Then the other one is arising and passing away. So these are the terms. If you are familiar during the meditation, you will see them. Then later on, you will see every phenomenon is like that. The birth and death. The coming and the going. The birth and death. The coming and the going. The arising and the passing away. And these are characteristics are impermanent. And the condition behind the arising is always dependent originating condition, means the worldly condition, because ours is the existential world within the condition world. So within the condition world, everything is impermanent. And because it's impermanent, it leads to suffering when you deludedly grasp and cling and want things your way, which is not nature's way. And this is automatic. And because it's impermanent, it's not a permanent and changing entity, therefore it is non-self or anatta in nature. Anatta means empty. We are everything just dependent originating, come and go, come and go. Like we went through earlier on. What is life? To go through life is to go through existence. And existence is time related. You can recall? To go through life is to go through existence. So life is related to existence. And existence is time related. To exist is to go through time. Then time, the whole spectrum of time can be divided into the three periods. You have your past, present, and future. So this one defines the whole spectrum of time. So of these three, past, present, and future, which is the reality? Past is already gone, no more reality. Future yet to come, also not a reality. So the only reality in life is the present moment. So that's why this present moment is the only reality in life. So we have to ask ourselves, moment to moment, life passes by. And this is the only reality. What are you doing? And this is also the highest in life. That's why they always talk about the present moment. And how stable is the present moment? This moment we talk about it, is dead and gone the next moment. Split second is dead and gone. So how real can life be? When the only reality in life, which is the present moment, is so unstable. Within the moment, if you say now, it's already gone. So the birth and death, if you are in sati or mindfulness in the state of meditation, you will see it very clearly, the impermanence, the unreality of life and existence. Split second is dead and gone. Split second is there. Every moment, every present moment is just that split second. That's the reason why in the Diamond Sutta and also Huining Six Patriarch Sutta, he always mentioned this. Famous stanza from the Diamond Sutta. Each year you wave a Zu Mong Huan Pao Yin Zu Lu Yi Lu Tian Ying Zuo Ru Si Guan. So this saying from the Diamond Sutta is very profound. He said everything within this universe, they are condition arising Dhamma. You wave a. And this condition arising Dhamma, they are like an illusion, dreamlike, and shadow. That's why, Zu Meng, Meng is dream, Huan, huan is illusion. Pao ying is like bubble or shadow. Then he said, it's like a dew, a morning dew, or a lightning flash. The morning dew means early morning you wake up when the temperature is still very cooling, you will see the dew. But after a while, when sunrise, the dew will evaporate. And it's just like that. So unreal. And the other one, which is very fast, is the present moment. That's why, zu lu yi lu tian, like a flash of lightning. Like a lightning flash is gone. And this present moment is just like that. Like a lightning flash is gone. So the whole of the phenomenal world, conditioned arising world, is just dreamlike, illusion, not real. So this understanding can give you the awakening if you really, really cultivate, develop the mindfulness, the sensitivity of mind, the understanding of life. Then when you realize the present moment is the only reality in life, you have to live the moment with understanding, with wisdom. And moment to moment, if you are aware, then you truly live life. Otherwise, you are completely deluded. And you don't really live. You existed through life. Yeah. To exist through life and to live life are two totally different things. Because you cannot be with the moment to experience all of the beauty and wonders of life. Because within the moment you are lost in thought. You are too busy thinking, planning, and worrying about your life. So much so you never get to live. Because your thought is very active. Your mind think a lot. It's very heedless. Okay? Can follow? Yeah. So this part, if you get it right, then you will understand the stanza, the teaching. Then, because King Sakya only mentioned the first two lines, and the Sakyamuni Buddha to be the Bodhisattva, he already knew this in his early day cultivation. That's why he told Sakka, the ghost. He said, you didn't finish. You only said the first two stanzas. There are the second half, you didn't finish. Then he mentioned the second half. When production and extinction are extinguished, when production and extinction are extinguished, then what happened? What happened? When there is no more arising and passing away, no more production and extinction, that still extinction is what is the meaning? What does it mean? What does it mean? What happens when there is no more production and cessation? So in Mandarin is 不生不灭. No more arising and ceasing. So this one can be arising and passing away or ceasing. That's why Mahayana, there is a saying, when you realize 不生不灭, what does it mean? 不生不灭means what? No arising, no ceasing. Means? How does production and extinction arise? 生灭. Means there is condition for them to arise, understand or not? So this one is condition arising world. So when there is no more production and extinction, this is the unconditioned. Understand? And when you realize the unconditioned, this is enlightenment. This is Nibbana. Can you understand? And this is what meditation is all about. Don't go and look for things. Don't go and deludedly want to be enlightened. There is nobody to be enlightened. When the mind realizes itself and sees and realizes the unconditioned, then Nibbana, which is the enlightenment, that still, the word is still. No more activity, no more movement. This is the key word, still. The stilling of all condition. The stilling of all condition. Is Nibbana. So this is the true understanding of this stanza. Huh? But Xuanhua didn't explain. That's why I have to go through here so that you can develop the understanding. Okay? Is it clear? Any question? Or anybody want to add anything? You can come forward and add it if you want. So this bhikshu, zi dao, it's like you know, zi dao, okay. So this bhikkhu, he couldn't understand this stanza, so now at least you are better than the bhikkhu, you now understand this four-line stanza. But Xuanhua didn't explain. Xuanhua used another aspect of the sutta to explain. He talked about the King Sakka trying to test the Bodhisattva in one of the early life. Then we go on to the sutta. Maybe we just stop after the sutta and leave the rest to next class. The master said, what are your doubt? All living beings have two bodies. Zitao replied. The physical body and the Dhamma body. The physical body is impermanent and is produced and destroyed. The Dhamma body is permanent and is without knowing or awareness. The sutta say that the extinction of production and the extinction of production and extinction is bliss. But I do not understand which body is in tranquil extinguished and which received the bliss. That's why there is such a question. How could it be the physical body which received the bliss? When this physical body is extinguished, the four elements scattered means they are dispersed. That is total suffering, and suffering cannot be called bliss. If the Dhamma body were extinguished, it would become like grass, trees, tiles, or stone. Then what would receive the bliss? So this is the patriarch's reply. Moreover, the Dhamma nature is the substance of production and extinction. And the five heaps, this is the five aggregate, are the function and production, the function of production and extinction. With one body having five functions, production and extinction are permanent. At the time of production, the function arises from the substance. At the time of extinction, the function returns to the substance. If there were rebirth, then sentient being would not cease to exist or be extinguished. If there were not rebirth, they would return to tranquil extinction and be just like insensate object. Thus, all Dhamma would be suppressed by Nirvana and there would not even be production. How could there be bliss? The Master said, you are a son of Sakya. How can you hold the deviant view of annihilation and permanence, which belongs to other religion, and criticize the supreme vehicle, Dhamma? According to what he said, there is a Dhamma body that exists apart from physical body, and a tranquil existence, extinction. Moreover, how come the English word become like that? Your purpose should be yours, isn't it? Your purpose. Moreover, you propose that there is a body which enjoys the permanent and bliss of Nibbana, but that is to grasp tightly into birth and death and endow in worldly bliss. So the duality arises again. That's why this monk cannot understand. So the sixth patriarch actually try to awaken him. Okay, we stop here. Then maybe we continue the next class. Okay. Do you have any question? Now it's about another 7 minutes before 4:30. There you can have your meditation. Okay, at least we finished the first two parts. Then this part, maybe you go back and read it out. The next class, we can discuss it more actively. Today one is like a revision. I have gone through this a few times. So the only difference is this particular topic gives us the condition to go through it as a revision, and then I can spend more time explaining it so that you can understand it more easily. For those who really have the faith and develop the sati or mindfulness and cultivation, then you can follow and you can understand very fast, and it's very penetrative. The moment you understand, you will become different. Your understanding will change you completely, transform you personality-wise, character-wise, understanding-wise, and you will develop the wisdom to liberate your mind, and you will have a different understanding of the whole of life and existence. Then you will have a lot of joy, a lot of respect and gratitude for the Buddha, for giving the world such beautiful teachings. Okay? Anybody got any question or anything that you want to add? Otherwise, you can have your meditation. Okay, we can have your meditation. You can have half an hour. I will allow you half an hour. After that, I will ring the bell. For those who still want to meditate, you can continue. For those who have had enough, you can slowly, mindfully come out of the meditation. Then you can report your meditation, or use this session to ask any question related to meditation and the teaching, or whatever doubt you have. You just have to raise your hand, we pass you the mic. Anybody? Pass to Mimi. Sorry, Mindy. Pass the mic to Mindy.
Brother Teo, I would like to report my meditation just now.
Good.
At first, I find that my body is quite with the heaviness and a bit tiredness. And then slowly, I find that.
It's okay.
The when the breath is getting slower, and then the mind activities will slow down as
slow
well.
Down, it will slow down.
Yes, and then the body will become lighter.
Yes.
Then slowly, the heaviness is gone. Then there are more awareness.
Yes.
Light, and then the breath is slower.
Correct. All this will happen. Yes.
Yeah, that's all.
Okay. Then what do you do after that? When it becomes slower, what do you do?
I do nothing. I just aware of the sound. I actually do nothing. I just aware of the vibration of the surrounding, the car.
Okay. So next time when this thing happens, you just relax into it. Always remember, relax to it, into it, and allow it to be. Where this quietness must become very, very quiet, very still. You just let it be. Then maintain the awareness. Then you can relax, then your meditation will become more stable. Then this so-called silent mind, all of a sudden, suddenly they will manifest. And when it manifests, you will know. Because it becomes very, very different. Suddenly you like enter into a state where the mind has become so still. Like middle of the night, suddenly no more traffic sound, no more vibration. Then within nature, there is nothing to disturb the peace, the silence. Then the mind that is aware of that is the true mind. So you continue to relax and allow it to be, then it will slow down until suddenly there is no more thought, no more thinking. And everything becomes so quiet and so still. Then there is like, you don't even know who you are, where you are, and what happened. It's just an awareness. But the mind that want to know is the one that is always disturbing. Where this one want to know whether you are doing it correct or not, then whether I just maintain awareness. It's not just maintain awareness. You just relax and continue to allow the mind to be. To be means let it slow down by itself. When you don't feed it with any more mental energy, this mind will return to its original state before the heedless thinking, before the stirring, before the reaction of mind. So when you don't have the delusion to create like and dislike, which are mental hindrance, then there is no mental hindrance. Then what you have is just that silence. That silence, when it manifests, it becomes sati. Then it becomes very quiet, very still. Then allow it to be. Then after that, you can. You try the lying down. The lying down is a better posture. Because if it's a sitting, you must know how to relax. You must really know how to relax. Then this silent mind, initially what most people go through is the piti, the sukha, and all those things. Then you have to continue to relax into it. then it becomes very quiet, very still. But a lot of people don't understand what meditation is. So what they are looking for is peacefulness of mind, calmness of mind. So they will do something to make them peaceful. Then they realize all this mind state cannot last for long. After a while, it will become different again. So they try again, thinking meditation is just to make themselves calm and peaceful. No, meditation is not to make yourself calm and peaceful. Meditation is to understand that you are allowing your mind to be. And the mind that returns to its original state is the meditative mind. So no need to do anything. So you have to be silent, aware. And when your mind starts to create the like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant, means the sensual desire, ill will, the mental hindrance, then the mental hindrance will hinder the mind from entering the meditative state. Then you will start to like react to a lot of things that happen. The pain, the numbness, the lack of peace and all those things. So this is what thought-based meditation is all about. It starts to create its own activity and make your meditation go the wrong way. So what you did was good, but you forgot one thing. When you realize that your body is like very heavy, then the breathing all initially when it started, it may not be so calm. Never mind, let it be, because this is due to your daily mindfulness not developed. When you have not developed your daily mindfulness, you will not be able to get into this state. The last time what you did was, you went to many of these retreats, I think. Then you go and do constantly. Then you managed to enter that state quite easily. But as you slowly become less and less involved in that type of meditation, then you forgot about your daily mindfulness meditation. If you have keep up with the daily mindfulness meditation and your five spiritual faculty, your meditation will become much, much more different. Means immediately when you sit down, all this lethargic mind or what, even if it arises, it's only for a while, then it will, like what you went through, it will slowly, slowly, like the mental activity slow down, the breathing also slow down, so everything just slow down. That it will stabilize because you know how to relax into it and silence. So this stabilizing of the mind is just to develop the sati, the mindfulness. Then you have to stabilize that. Means you have to allow it to become very quiet, very still, on its own, not through forcing it. Then sometimes the anapanasati can be quite strong. So if it come, let it be. Then you go into the anapanasati until no thought. Forget about the thought. Just go into it, anapanasati, go into it. Then initially, it's like you are focused on the nostril there. It's like all the in and out breath is just centered there. Then it will allow you to go into continuous mindfulness until you absorb into it. Initially, experience it. Because that will make your mind very strong. And it will make you very calm. Then you can actually heal your body, recuperate your body, and charge your body up. Then after that, relax into it. Relax into it until this breathing becomes very, very subtle, long breathing. But the mindfulness is continuous. Then later on, after long period of cultivation and practice, especially with the daily mindfulness, the moment you sit, the mind become very quiet and still straight away. Where the spiritual faculty is there, no more mental hindrance, straight away it will settle down. Then even if, let's say, you have a tired day, working day, you do a lot of activity, then your mind is maybe not so stable in the daily mindfulness. It means most of the time you're still distracted because you have a lot of things to do, the worldly things. It's also no problem. The moment you come in, at the most 5-10 minutes, all this activity will slow down. Then you will go into that silent state, the stillness, or what they call the meditative mind. And very fast, your mind becomes quiet. So that should be the ability of that mind, to develop that meditative mind straight away. Then after that, you continue to relax into it and let it be. Then this stillness will become more and more stable, more and more stable, until completely no thought. Then when the mind enters sati and no more thought, even the breathing will become very quiet, very, very quiet, until like no more movement, no more breathing, but you are not dead. Then that short breath, very, very short and subtle breath, if you continue to relax and silent, the sati, when it comes, when your mind is in sati, that mindfulness is different already. It becomes more refined, more clear. Then even the subtle breathing, like you can be mindful of it, very easy, mindful, and you are very calm, very still. Then any slightest movement, sometimes not necessarily the breathing, anywhere, you will become magnified and your awareness is there. Then you continue to relax and silent. And through that cultivation, not long, you will understand what the silent mind is. Then after that, when you come out of the meditation, you realize that sati follow you. That everything you do, you see, you hear, you smell, you taste tactile, it's like there is a flow. The mindfulness and the phenomena move as one. Means your mind is already in sati. And then maintain that mindfulness, continue with your mindfulness. Initially it's the four posture, the kaya activity of body and mind move as one, body and mind move as one. Start off with your daily activity, then later on extend it to your household work, maybe cooking, sweeping, mopping and other things, even washing clothes, looking after your plant or hanging clothes and all those things. You develop mindfulness. Then later on, as you move out of your house, driving car, going to work, interacting with people or what, you develop mindfulness. So that the mindfulness become a part of your daily activity, a part of life. Then when your daily mindfulness stabilizes, you become very different. You will be in sati throughout the day, heedful, mindful throughout the day. That time you will progress very fast and you will understand a lot of things very fast. So this form of meditation, because it's so short, you just try your very best to develop it through the understanding. Just let it be settled down. Then when you say the activity becomes slow already, don't just maintain. Continue to relax into it and just silent. Don't try to know. Then if it's sleepy or what, if your body is tired, you need to sleep, you lie down and rest. But maintain awareness if you can. Then feel your bodily activity against the floor or pillow or what. Then you can, after your sati come out, you can feel all the vibration that arise at the tactile point of your body against whatever that you are sleeping on. Then even your hand, putting on your laps or over the other hand, you can feel the vibration between them. You become actually every part of your body is in a state of vibration flux. You put it against your bed, your pillow, you silent everything you feel, or against the floor, you can feel the vibration. They are there, and that is the sensitivity of mindfulness that you must have. You can't even feel all this means your mindfulness is still yet to be there, means there's a lot of thinking. But when you can really quiet your mind, silent, then the mindfulness will pick up all these things, all the activity, all the vibration. Then wherever you locate this mind, it's very sensitive. It can feel inside and go inside. That's why after that, you want to feel your heartbeat. You don't need stethoscope. You just silent and stay around the heart area. Then the pulse of life, the vibration, all very clear. Then you can see how it moves. And sometimes why is it agitated? Then how it actually slow down and quiet down when you meditate. All this you can feel them experience. So what you need is just sati, mindfulness, the silent mind, the awareness. Good, thank you, Sadhu, for the sharing. Anybody else want to report the meditation? Okay, you don't have, maybe I read this to you. Last time I promised you all, I think I say I will share something from this book, The Method of No Method by Zen Master Sun Yen Fa Si. I will just read this to you. He also understands what the silent mind is, but he used a different word. He called it the silent illumination. So, silent, here he got it right. Illumination, he also got it right. So, what he wants you to understand is this word, silent illumination. That's why his meditation is called silent illumination. So to him, if your silence is without illumination, that is not the meditation. Means you have gone into samatha. So here, illumination according to him is awareness. Or mindfulness. So when you are silent without awareness, that is not the true mind. You must have illumination. Aware, that nature is aware inside there. So I read this to you, then you can have better understanding. The editor's preface. What is a Zen retreat? In the Zen tradition, a Zen retreat is an occasion to dedicate oneself to intensive meditation for an extended period of time. In order to collect one's mind, means make your mind collected, to bring the mind to a central focus, a mind that is free from the wandering thoughts and attachment. See, this is what all meditators want to do, because the untrained mind think a lot, is very heedless. So I repeat this so that you can understand. What is a Zen retreat? A Zen retreat is an occasion to dedicate oneself to intensive meditation for an extended period of time in order to collect one's mind, to bring about a central focus, a mind that is free from wandering thought and attachment. Means that mind is not heedlessly thinking, lost in thought, wandering thought and attachment, worrying about this, worrying about that, wanting to do this, wanting to do that. All those things is not there. So the task of the retreat master is to use skillful means, like method and techniques and all those things, or chanting or kongan, to help practitioner to do this. And giving oral teaching is one of them. So all these are skillful means that they adopt to make the mind quiet, to anchor the mind to the meditation object, so that you can develop mindfulness of the object of meditation. Then when you are mindful without thought, you enter sati. Then you experience piti, the spiritual calmness, spiritual peacefulness. Then later on, if you continue to relax into it, it will become more refined, more peaceful. From piti, it will become sukha. Then from sukha, you continue to relax and silent, it will become pasati, tranquility of mind or stillness of mind. Then you stabilize it, it becomes samadhi. That's how the enlightenment factor arises. So, piti leading to pasati, leading to samadhi. Then you can see things as they are and awaken. So oral teaching may involve instructing in a particular method or technique, expounding of the Buddha Dhamma and teaching of the master, and exhort students to cultivate diligently. In the following chapters, all these three elements are presented. Then I can skip this, because after that, not important. Then I come to the translator's introduction. So the method of no method is Zen master Sunyan's definitive work on the practice and realization of silent illumination. So this is the one he focused on. Or they call it Mo Jiao. Is it Mo Jiao or what? What is the Mandarin word for silent illumination? MOUJAO. Never mind. They call it by certain name. I think it's Mo Jiao, something like that. Never mind, we forget about that word first. Often referred to as the method of no method, silent illumination is one of the most subtle and profound practice ever developed in the history of Zen and Mahayana Buddhism. It has a long and complete history tracing back to the simultaneous cultivation of samatha and vipassana, or stillness and insight, method found in the Indian Buddhism. It also resonates with the Dzogchen and Mahamudra practice of the Tibetan Buddhism. In China, this practice appears to have been orally transmitted through the Chaodong tradition, I think, of Zen Buddhism. But it was only in the 12th century, through the poetic writing of the Zen master Hongzi, Zhenjue, between the year 1091 and 1157, that the practice became widely known. However, after Master Hongzi, the practice of silent illumination again receded into obscurity. In this volume, Master Sun Yan elucidated this ancient practice and clarified the views and method and the experiential state associated with it. Thus, this volume is a meeting of mind between Sun Yan and Hongzi. So Master Sun Yan has asked this translator to write this short introduction in order to provide pertinent information on Zen Master Hongzi and show how this early master was instrumental in his own teaching, in the hope that this long-lost tradition from China may be appreciated and revived. While Master Sun Yan holds lineage in both the extant school of Zen and also teaches Hua Tao or Gong An method, he has tirelessly taught this silent illumination or Mo Jiao. Mo Jiao, or Mo Jiao, okay. They pronounce as Mo Jiao for the past 17 years. Numerous people have already derived benefit from using this technique or method, and many have realized the true nature of their mind. So this silent illumination can allow you to realize your true mind, which is the silent mind. And it's actually nothing special. But this teaching has been forgotten. That's why somehow he got the parami, he understood this Hongzi's teaching. That's why he developed his meditation along the same way. Then he teach it. But it's very easy to understand. When you can be silent as a free mind, there will be awareness inside. It will have, but he called it illumination. I don't want to use all these words because illumination can give the meaning of what? What is illumination? Like there is light, isn't it? Illuminate. Actually, what he is telling you is you have awareness, understand now? It's not illumination. It's not like a light inside there, illuminate and let you see clearly. No. When you are aware without thought, because the thought, the emotion, the mental state, the activity of mind, the aggregate of mind, they are the one that is obscuring your true mind, like the cloud. You understand? The moving cloud. So the moving cloud, sometimes there is thunder, there is lightning. You understand? Then there is all of even activity within, a lot of phenomena. So similarly, your mind, that true mind, is clouded by the emotion, your sankhara, your activity of mind, your mental state, your feeling, your whatever activity of mind. So, as I explained, you can only do one thing at a time. Either you are silent within and aware, or you are thinking, means lost in thought, heedless. You will know how is your mind like. Yeah, most of the time it's too busy thinking non-stop. You can't even have a moment of peacefulness, stillness, silence. That's why Krishnamurti say the space between thought, you hardly have any space. Yeah, your thought keep on arising, proliferating. But you can have a thought that arise, then after that, no thought. That gap, the space between thought, if it can be longer and longer and longer, means you have sati, you are a true cultivator. Then that true mind can manifest. Without thought, you already aware. Without thought, that true mind is already there. But living being hardly can realize or come to that understanding because they seldom have that mind state. Most of the time, they think a lot, even in their sleep. The subconscious and unconscious release, they are continuously arising, proliferating. So this part is very important. That's why he teach this type of meditation. Then numerous people have already derived the benefit from using this silent illumination, and many have realized the true nature of their mind. Then I read on, hopefully you can understand. It is uncertain whether Master Da Hui and Master Hong Chi ever crossed paths at Mao Yunzhu while studying under Master Yuan Wu. Certainly, they became good friends in the later part of their career. Master Da Hui was known to be a vociferous critic of the passive form of quiet sitting. You know what is passive form of quiet sitting? Go into jhana, go into samatha, concentration, absorption, one-pointedness. That type of silent meditation, he criticized. He called it passive, means not active, no awareness inside there, or quiet sitting. He even called that form of sitting the deviant zen of silent illumination. See? He was so precise, and he really say it that way. For this reason, scholars today typically historicize this criticism as a response to Hong Zi's teaching. However, on further examination, we see that there were many self-proclaimed contemporary masters teaching a form of deviant passive Zen, and that the friendship between Master Hong Zi and Dao Hui was undeniable. Each invited the other to give Dhamma talk at their own monastic assembly. And when Hong Zi was about to pass away, he wrote a will requesting Master Da Hui to take care of his assembly and oversee his funeral. In Master Da Hui's own discourse record, we see the mutual admiration of his eulogy to his close Dhamma friend Hong Zi. Now that he is gone, Da Hui lament, who else can be my intimate friend? Then the rest you can read. Okay, then I will read to you another part. Zen Master Sun Yan's teaching. Zen Master Sun Yan is the lineage holder of both the Ling Zi and Cao Tong school of Zen. He also holds a unique position in Chinese Buddhist history, known as an important figure in promoting and reinvigorating Chinese Buddhism. He is the first Buddhist cleric in modern time to have received a doctorate, or you call it a PhD, in Buddhist literature. and to have established an official government recognition because he went to Japan to study Buddhism and he has a PhD. His pursuit of a modern academic degree stemmed from his vow to elevate the education level and change the deplorable image of Buddhist cleric in China. He also has a keen interest in promoting and sustaining world peace. Amidst these endeavors, however, he has never lost touch with his root as first and foremost a Zen monk. Thus, his Zen teaching are systematic, practical, and extremely clear, particularly to contemporary practitioners. Because Sun Yan teaches both Lingzi and Cao Tong practices, his style resembles most that of the ancient Chinese Zen master. Then that of modern contemporary Zen teachers. Excuse me. For many years, he has taught his Western disciple the more aggressive method of or critical phrase as an object of meditative investigation. The practice of Huatao method is similar to the Japanese practice of Kung'an method, but over the years he has found that without a stable mind and a congruent sense of self, many modern people experience negative side effects from this practice. Thus, in the early years of 1990s, he began to systematize some of the teaching of Hongzi in order to make them accessible to students of Zen. These teachings were drawn largely from Master Hongzi's more poetic work on the realization of silent illumination. Then I will read on the essence. However, this work, as beautiful and poetic as they are, depict not the actual practice of silent illumination, but the essence of intrinsic selfless wisdom, free from contrived effort and intentionality. In Hongzi's own words, it cannot be practiced nor actualized, because it is something intrinsically full and replete. You understand this sentence or not? I repeat. It cannot be practiced nor actualized, because it is something intrinsically full and replete. What did I tell you? Sati cannot be practiced. You remember? Because it's intrinsically within your nature. Like the fish, you need to teach them how to swim or not. It is their nature. You put them in water, they know how to swim. You don't try to teach the fish to swim. So when you want to practice sati, means you don't understand what sati is. Sati is all the time there, except when you are heedless, lost in thought. Whenever you are lost in thought, when there is thought, there is no sati. That's why you have to understand, the moment you are silent, you are already in sati. Your sati is awareness before the knowing, before the arising of thought. So this part is what he meant. Hongzi said, it cannot be practiced nor actualized, but it is something intrinsically full and replete. It's already there. No other thing can defile it. See? Not like sunsil, polish until it shine. Why must you do that? Well, that nature got no thought, no duality. Cannot be defiled or polluted. It is thoroughly pure to its depth, intrinsically wise or intrinsic. Wisdom respond to condition. Though conscient, it is resplendent. Originally, one does not need a hairbreadth of an extended or external object. Clearly, this is a matter to be found out within one's own nature. That's why you cannot practice it. Then after that, I read to you. This one is a very good one.
There are few concrete instructions here. However, there are other passages in Hongzhi's enormous corpus that give us glimpses of what one was supposed to do in sitting meditation. For example, Master Hongzhi state, you listen to this. You can understand this, means you understand what meditation is. The correct way to cultivate is to simply sit in stillness and silently investigate. No thought, nothing. Deep down, there is a state one reaches where externally one is no longer swayed about by causes and conditions. The mind being empty, it is all-embracing. Of course, he used the word, its luminosity, means awareness or clarity, being wondrous. It is perfectly apt and impartial. Internally, there is no thought. Internally, there are no thoughts of grasping after things, vast and remote, being just as it is, free from confusion, alive and potent. All dependency and opposition are severed. One remains self-contained. Means it's already, like the Heart Sutta say, perfect by itself. 不增不减, no addition, no subtraction. So everything is already by itself sufficient. 不生不灭, nothing inside there. There is nothing. It's the unconditioned. And that is the one that is aware, that can awaken and understand. Taken at face value, it appears that Master Hongzhi is recommending sitting in stillness, but the precise meaning of his recommendation is silently investigating. It's never given anywhere. What is the actual method of practice? What does one place one's attention? Where does one place one's attention? So these are all the questions by people who don't understand meditation. Passage like this suggests only a general sense of non-attachment and clear luminosity. It is little wonder that such elusive teaching receded into obscurity after Master Hongzhi's passing. For this reason, Master Sun Yan has given structure to the practice by delineating the experience of practicing silent illumination into stages that came about as a response to his student's question. That's why the condition arrived when the student asked him, then all this start to arise. When he start to explain, then more and more understanding come about. That's why he now put it in words for you. In the 1980s, Master Sun Yan actually tried to teach a more formless method of silent illumination in which the mind does not hold on to anything but has to maintain utter clarity. That's why there must be awareness, clarity. It was also stageless. He simply told us to sit and let go of everything without allowing the mind to abide anywhere, whether it is in sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, or thought. As soon as we discovered that the mind was caught up with something, we were instructed to let it go and return to the naturally clear mind, or the natural clarity of awareness itself. That's why you have to revert back to the true mind. This method stemmed from his 6 years of solitary retreat and his first encounter with Master Hongzhi's teaching. Master Sun Yan told me that at one time during his retreat, he simply sat in natural clarity without any sense of self or time. That's why he don't even know who he is. He don't even know where he is in the time. It was the most natural practice to him, one that accord with his realization of the nature of mind and the truth of non-abiding and formlessness as taught in the Platform Sutta. In the later part in his retreat, when he read Hongzhi's teaching, He felt a natural and deep resonance with silent illumination. He once said to me, "This teaching is truly wonderful. More people should know about it." Later on, when he went to Japan, he discovered a similar practice taught by the late Bantetsusu Shion Rosi, a Dhamma heir of the Hirata Daion Sogaku sect or lineage. Master Sun Yan's early students were able to use this approach because he was always present in the Zen hall during intense retreat, observing everyone's mental state and readily exercise expedient means to fine-tune the practice of retreatants. His immense energy and presence alone were often sufficient to keep practitioners on the matter. In later years, due to his poor health and his obligation, he was often not able to be physically present in the Zen hall, except for evening Dhamma talk. So in the mid-1990s, he started to formulate a more systematic and pedagogic, pedagogical expedient means for teaching silent illumination, which would allow his student to use the method and not relying on his presence. He formulated silent illumination into three stages. Now, this one you have to listen. The first stage is the experience of oneness of body and mind engaging in sitting. The second stage is oneness of self and environment. The third stage is experiencing the vast boundlessness internally and externally, unimpeded by any sense of obstruction, yet with the mind clear about the details of everything. There is also a preliminary stage where the practitioner simply tries to stay relaxed. See, the word is relaxed. And calm at all times, focusing on the totality of the body sitting. All of these stages are detailed in his book and can be experienced in the course of practice. However, this instruction only pertains to the practice and not the realization of silent illumination. These are the preliminary exercises or training to develop the silent mind, the silent illumination. So the realization aspect, which is the actual meditation, how when this silent mind arises, when you are connected to the true mind, or your sati has become very stable, then how it develops wisdom and awakening, that one he has not included. While people may become attached to these stages as if they were markers of spiritual progress, in reality, the silent illumination of Master Hongzhi does not fall into stages. Master Sun Yan divides the stages as expedient means. This strategy allows him to graph different stages of silent illumination onto his basic teaching and the stages of samadhi practice, from scattered mind, heedless thinking mind, to concentrated and unified mind. He balanced the stages of samadhi practice with the cultivation of prajna. By emphasizing the cultivation of an active awareness of body, mind, and environment, so as to avoid the fallacy of a lopsided focus on stillness alone. So you have to develop awareness on many things, like the Buddha teach. So he didn't explain the four foundations. You have to be aware of your kaya, physical, then your feeling, then your mental state, and on all dhammas. But he's trying to develop an extensive awareness. That's why initially is you develop the awareness of your body and mind as one. Then he forgot to tell you, when you are silent, you can understand what is going on. That's why I used to tell you, you will know who you are and what you are, because that silent that is aware of the form and mind will see clearly how your mind stirs, how you get yourself entangled into all that. That part he didn't explain. He just asks you to maintain awareness of body and mind. then after you have stabilized this, you're supposed to see clearly how it conditioned feeling. That's why Vedana Nupassana come in. Then mind state, how you stir, how you react, how you entangle yourself, how the mental hindrance arise. Then like the Satipatthana Sutta, you can trace the origination factor, then retrospectively reverse. All this is not mentioned, not taught. Then when you cultivate the mental hindrance, awareness of the mental hindrance, you just silent and develop the awareness. Then the silent mind will come to understand exactly like what the Buddha mentioned. You will come to understand how the unarisen mental hindrance come to be. Then after you continue to develop the silent, you will come to understand how the arisen mental hindrance cease to be. Then after you cultivate this for a period, then the wisdom and the understanding is there. Then you will come to know how in the future the arisen mental hindrance cannot arise anymore. So all this is in the teaching, but they didn't relate because theirs is more towards Zen. Then the other part. The lamp is the body of the light. The lamp is the function, the light is the function of the lamp. The name may be two, but in essence, they are basically one and the same. So this one is just to let you understand samadhi and prajna or wisdom is the same. Student of the way do not say that there is a difference between samadhi coming first and then producing prajna, and prajna coming first and then producing samadhi. They are like a lamp and a light. If there is a lamp, there is light. Without lamp, there is darkness. The lamp is the body of the light. The light is the function of the lamp. The name may be two, but in essence, they are basically one and the same. So without samadhi, there is no wisdom. But without wisdom, there is no real equanimity, which is the real samadhi. So both are correct. So samadhi and prajna, they are together. You cannot separate them. Just like the Six Patriya Platform Sutta, they are like two ends of the stick. You hold one, the other end exists. You cannot say, I only want this end. But if it's a stick, it will have two ends. So samadhi and prajna, they go together. Without samadhi, there is no prajna. Without real prajna, there is no equanimity or real stability or samadhi. So all this is for those who already gone through the cultivation, they will understand, they will know. Then I read the other part. Silent illumination as a cultivation or practice does not lead to enlightenment because it is originally a method of no method that points to the natural and obvious wisdom within all of us. So this one, silent illumination as a practice, it does not lead to enlightenment, but it's a step towards. Because if you don't know that this is the meditation that can develop the awakening, you use the wrong instrument, you use the thought and go and search and do all the thought-based meditation which he didn't explain, you can never awaken. You can only awaken if you train your mind until it has this silent mind. Of course, with awareness we did. Silent because of awareness. And this is a free mind. If it's not a free mind, there is no awareness. That's why it's called deviant samadhi. Jhana, concentration. Thought-based meditation, energy field. So the real silent illumination means the silent mind, which is a free mind that has awareness within, that is aware. The one in jhana is not aware. One-pointedness, everything locked in the one, so still, no movement, no activity. That's why all the energy build up, because of the focusing, the concentration. That's why they develop psychic ability and all those things. That is still within the field of thought. Mind state are they. Okay, we still got 15 minutes. I go on to the next page. Okay. To enter the practice, you need to do just two things. Relax your body and relax your mind. See? The first stage is always relax body and mind, like I tell you. But they didn't explain deeper. Because relax body and mind, the meaning is very deep. Especially the mind. Every mind state that arises, whether energy build up or whatever, you just relax into it. You don't try to do otherwise, just relax. Then the energy will not build up. Then you will not get into trouble. You will not get into samatha or thought-based meditation, energy field and all those things. First, make sure that all parts of your body are completely relaxed and at ease. This is very good. This is the physical body part. Next, relax your attitude and your mood. Make sure that your mental attitude, the tone of your approach and your moods are also at ease. This relaxation is the foundation for success in meditation or cultivating silent illumination. So, just now you say relax your attitude and all those things. If you are not careful, you will go and play with your thought, your emotion. When I say relax mind, means whatever mind state that arises, mood or what, good or bad, just relax into it. Forget about it. But these are mind states. You just relax into it. That's it. Don't try to know. Maintain silence. Then when the moods, the emotion, the thinking, whatever, cease, then the silent mind will arise. Then he said, begin with a comfortable sitting posture. Let's start with your head. Please make sure that each part of this region is relaxed. See? It's like the mind sweeping method forehead. Relax your face. Now relax your eye. See? Exactly like the mind sweeping method. But he didn't explain in detail. Then he said, check, are they relaxed? Proceed downward to relax your cheek, down to your neck, to your shoulder. Are they relaxed? But he didn't combine with metta. Radiating a radiant smile and all those things. Continue down to your arms and then your hand. Make sure that they are all relaxed. Follow with the chest. And now the back. We should be upright and yet relaxed. Please make sure that the muscles of your abdomen are relaxed. This is very important. Once these exercises are completed, there should be 3 points making contact on your cushion. This one I explained before. Your buttock and your toenail. Only these 3 points should feel your weight and ground you to the floor as your whole body relaxes from head to toe. The rest of your body should also be completely relaxed. So the 3 point is a tripod for you to adjust, understand? But he didn't explain here. Your buttock, you can feel that your buttock is too numb or too heavy, then you lean forward a bit so that you spread your weight, bodily weight, to your between the thigh and your knee there, where you touch the floor when you meditate. But if you do the simple cross leg, then it's your foot and ankle there. So these are the 2 points. So you lean forward a bit, you will transmit the full weight of the body from the buttock to the front a bit. So you spread it out. Then you just adjust until whatever proportion that is suitable for you. Then you feel relaxed, silent. Then you meditate in the sitting posture. But the best is lying down. But they never teach. So this part we can skip. After doing this exercise, if you still feel that you are not sufficiently relaxed, please do it again. From the top, relax part by part, all the way down to your feet. Mentally sweep down. See? Mind sweeping method. Sweep down your body part by part and relax each region. Do this as often as you need in order to feel relaxed. See? Relaxing body and mind is very important. And don't think that, oh, beginner only do this. No. If you have the heedless thinking, if your mind is not trained, this is the best way to decondition your heedless thinking. Those who know, they will understand. They're entering the practice of silent illumination. Once you have relaxed your body, notice that your bodily weight has settled down. Proceed to simply being aware of yourself, sitting there and putting your total awareness or mindfulness on your body sitting there. If you are relaxed and you have focused your awareness on yourself just sitting there, you have already entered the practice of silent illumination. However, this is just the beginning. See? Able to relax and develop silent awareness is just the beginning. That's why I say after the mind sweeping method, you will become more calm and more peaceful because the heedless thinking is like deconditioned. When you just feel and relax, when you totally relax, your mind will be deconditioned from the heedless thinking before. So if you can do the mind sweeping method long enough, 5 to 10 minutes or what, this heedless thinking will be replaced by the what they call the inner peace developed through this mind sweeping method. But because I combine it with metta, loving kindness for you, you will experience well-being. Well-being is very important. Inner peace leading to inner well-being will make yourself really, really relaxed and what they call revitalized. Well, when you can radiate a radiant smile, what happens? When you can smile, there is joy there. So all those attitude, mood, all, no more. Well, there is just joy, love. May I, this body and mind of mine be well. And you feel all the body itself having this well-being and happiness. There is just this joy. And this one is a relaxed emotion. You cannot smile if you are not happy, I tell you. But when you are happy, when you smile, you are full of joy. And a person that is full of joy got no stress. You understand? That's how all this negative emotion and mood will gone. Then because you decondition your heedless thinking, you just feel and relax, no more thought. So this will bring the mind to its original state of silence, stillness. That's why immediately after the mind sweeping method, you are quiet, peaceful, but not stable. That's why after that, you have to stabilize that mind state. And I teach you Anapanasati, which is one of the very good way of developing the meditation. You only need to do all this mind sweeping method and Anapanasati if you don't have the spiritual faculty. This one they didn't teach. If you have the spiritual faculty, technically no need to train. Straight away you enter sati. You enter the meditative state. That's why spiritual faculty is very important. Sada, virya, sati, samadhi and panya. Daily mindfulness is very important. We have faith, sada and virya, very easy to develop. Then sati is the difficult one. So if you stabilize the daily mindfulness, you train yourself diligently, strive on with heedfulness, then your sati will fall into play. Then throughout the day you will be heedful, ever mindful to cultivate noble eightfold path. That's how you progress. Then your meditation, your sitting, very fast. No need to do all this. So here they teach a general technique without elaborating on all the other important aspects of the Buddha's teaching, which are the mental hindrance and the spiritual faculty. Anyway, I read on a bit more. If you have wandering thought or heedless thinking, you may open your eye slightly. See, they teach you to do that. Well, a lot of people, the moment you close your eye, a lot of thought go on. So he say, you can open your eye. But if you open your eye, you got more distraction. Well, you see more things. But this is what they teach you. Then if you find yourself becoming drowsy or sleepy, it is a sign that you are not relaxed. Not necessary. This one is not necessary. Because sometimes your body tired, also sleepy. And when you don't understand the importance of meditation, you don't have virya, you will also give rise to the mental hindrance of sleepiness, lethargic mind. That's why they don't understand the spiritual faculty to balance the mental hindrance. So anyway, this is what he say, no harm. If you are completely relaxed and are aware of your body just sitting there, then you won't be drowsy. Drowsiness result when you do not use, when you are not using your method properly, either not being relaxed or not putting your mind on just sitting. It may be you have already given up on your method, or you may be sitting but not practicing just sitting. Sit to them is practice just sitting. Actually, the word is wrong, Anasana. No need to practice. Because he already say, Hong Tzu, cannot be practiced. Why you want to practice sitting? Just silent, relax, aware. No need to practice. The moment you are without thought, the silent illumination come in already. So what he is trying to tell you is, you are not able to be in that state because you are not doing it with understanding. And the word he used is wrong, contradict himself. But maybe they take the word to mean differently. Although they use the word practice, it's not supposed to be a practice. It's supposed to be an understanding. Just silent. Until no more thought. Then after that, you read the rest on your own. There is another part which is very interesting. Use the mic. Use the mic. Where's the mic? Mindy there.
There's one retreat, I think it's on sitting on totality. That one's very good.
Yeah, what do you do? What do they teach you?
They just say there's no object.
Okay.
You just sit. And you let your anything that is arise, that you are just aware. And I did that. In fact, I find it's much easier.
And what were you doing when they say just aware? You're supposed to relax.
Yeah, once you relax, when your mind is very...
No, when you say practice sitting, just sitting.
No, just sitting in totality, not practice. Sitting in totality.
Okay, sitting in totality.
You just see, last time when we sit, due to certain extents we will have, because we are attached to our body, you see. So to sometimes you will find that there is a tension. But sitting in totality, you just sit and you don't have a focus in any object.
Correct, you don't have a focus. But then what are you doing in the name of meditation? That is very important.
I just relax. Just relax.
That's why at least now you use the word relax.
Yeah, just relax.
When you relax, what is the understanding is when you relax, energy cannot build up, understand?
So that is
what you're supposed to do. That's why it's not just sitting, understand?
That means you don't have any... You realize that when you have tension,
you see,
are aware.
This word, sitting in totality, is a word. It's just like any method and technique, anapanasati or what. Different people will do it differently. Because your interpretation of sitting in totality, you have to understand what that thing is. You understand. Otherwise, you cannot make it.
No, but in the book, Method or No Method, Master Sun Yuan had explained.
Explain what aspect. That's why we want to make that one clear so that you know
that
what you are doing. You may feel good, no doubt about it, because that is just a peaceful mind, you understand? But that has nothing to do with developing understanding and wisdom. That is not the real silent mind. That is the mind that feels good, you understand? So you may like the word, because everything that you do for the first time, if it can make you peaceful and quiet, you will feel good, I tell you. The problem with meditation is it's not about good or bad meditation. It's not about the mind state. It's how you can understand what you are doing in the name of meditation. You are there to train your mind to have sati. That is number one, primary. And sati is when you are aware without thought, you are already in sati. So what Hongzhi is trying to tell you is, this silent illumination is already there. No need to practice. You understand? That's why you just silent, relax, and let things be. Let things be means you maintain that relaxed state. Then when the thought cease, straight away you are with the silent mind, awareness. And that awareness is not a focused awareness. You understand? It's not correct, because your mind is actively trying to do silent, what you call it, silent totality or what? No, silent what? What's the name that you... sitting in totality. So that is the concept you are holding to meditate. Do you understand? Do you understand? Don't want to know. Don't put focus anywhere. That is still the thought telling you. Because you don't know what sati is. Sati is the moment you sit until you are in a relaxed state without thought. Then the sati will manifest. And when the sati manifests, you don't go and use it. The moment you use it, it becomes the thought. Because sati cannot be practiced. You have to experience it. The awareness will arise when there is no thought. When the awareness arises without thought, you will know what sati is. The form and mind will know what sati is. There is no more about good and bad meditation. Understand now? That's why, whatever method you call it, whether sitting in totality or whatever, if you don't understand what you are doing there, then that is not meditation. Meditation can only be developed with understanding. Means, why are you sitting? That you say, sometimes there is pain, there is numbness, I don't want to know. Because sitting in totality. So you just, like the concept tell you, don't focus anywhere. Just sitting in... But that word, nobody understands. What he is trying to tell you is, you are doing a type of skillful means to train your mind to have sati. And you are going to stabilize that mind after that. Then only it can be used for meditation. So this part needs to be understood. Maybe when he gave the instruction, he understand. But you all that do the practice may not understand. But if you understand, you will progress differently. Your mind become very different. Then you will be in a completely different mind state after that. Because if you continuously develop the silent illumination without thought, you can do it for a period of time. Not even one day. Even for an hour or two, your mind is completely different, I tell you. That sati make you very different. But you are not doing that. You are enjoying the peace, understand? The calmness. You are less thought. But you're supposed to be in that state without arising anything. Not dwelling anywhere. That's why he said no dwelling. Just silent, relax. Then until the thought cease, or little, or no thought. That's why like the thought slowly, the activity slow down. You're supposed to be aware of all this. Then everything becomes quiet until no more activity. Then suddenly, that stillness, that tranquility, the paucity will arise. And the form and mind will know. And the mind that is in that state of stillness, tranquility, is a free mind, completely free. You go and try it, otherwise you cannot understand. There is no more a method or a technique, no more the word silent, what you call sitting in silence, or totality. No more the word, because that word is just a word to explain things. But if you don't understand the word, it becomes another technique. Understand? then like you mentioned and described just now, don't want to focus, don't want to put your mind anywhere, then what do you do? Because there is still a thought that want to do, understand or not? That still want to know whether they are doing it correctly or not. Then when you experience some calm or what, that mind that understand that you are in calmness, think that you have progressed. It's very beneficial, very good. But when I ask you, why are you doing this in the name of meditation, you cannot answer me. And you don't know. That this is just to prepare yourself to have this silent mind so that you can develop the daily mindfulness. So that you can develop the insight into phenomena. So that this silent mind can truly develop the wisdom and the understanding. And you're supposed to see the five aggregate of form and mind arising and passing away. Every moment of sense door activity upon contact. Well, when you are sitting, your senses are still open. Your activity of mind sankara maybe has slowed down, but you are enjoying those good states, which is sensual desire, without you knowing it. It is still lost in thought, and you think that is deep. Then you still maintain with the thought, I am not focusing anywhere. I am doing sitting, what you call it, sitting in, not sitting, practicing what? Sitting in totality, sitting in totality. So you will get yourself confused if you don't have the understanding. Because what he is teaching you is very simple. Just go in like what they say, relax. Even the sitting is they start with the mind sweeping method. Understand? Relax, relax, relax. Every part of it, body and mind. Until it's just aware. Then aware of what? The body and mind in sitting posture. Then after that, extend to the environment. That's why Hong Zi don't have a stage like that one. Understand? He don't teach you start with body and mind, then go to the environment, then go beyond the environment. So all this is good, but he has to devise a method and a technique to guide you along. You have to understand his meaning, not attached to his word. Then, like a robot, follow what he tells you. When you truly understand meditation, the silent mind, don't try to know, it will understand and awaken by itself. Technically, you don't need teacher. The moment you are connected to the silent mind will know how to meditate and develop the understanding. That is what you're supposed to understand. The thought never come in anymore after that. It can arise, then it will pass away. The space between thought become more and more extended until there is hardly any thought. Then throughout the day, you are very quiet, very still. Then you have understanding, you have joy. Then your mind no longer like before, stir, react, create all the duality. The like and dislike, the what they call mental hindrance. Because this mind that has the understanding is different. It's just aware. Then it does not stir because initially it has samadhi. So when it's in the state of samadhi, everything is just the way it is. Then when wisdom set in, you don't need samadhi for the mind to be peaceful. And that mind just aware. And it can understand many things. And when you are aware in the midst of life, you will awaken to all the characteristics. You will understand all of the essential Dhamma that the Buddha teach. Everything is all weakness within the form and mind. And you can develop the clarity of it because you have the silent mind. And the silent mind, you can use any word, whether silent illumination or whatever, as long as you understand that it's not a light. It's not something that you illuminate inside that. No, it's just clarity. Aware. And there's no word to describe this thing. That's why I say the form and mind will know the moment you are in sati. It will know what that sati is. That pasati, the silent mind. Because it will go through it and realize it. So it's not a practice where you go and chase for it and look for it. And with a mind having a concept of what this is, then go and do. Forget about the word. Just relax, silent. Understand that the moment you are without thought, you are already in sati.
So how can your thought cease? How can your thought cease? Without the spiritual faculty, it cannot cease. You understand? That's why either you cultivate the spiritual faculty, the mental hindrance no more, then it can cease. Otherwise, you have to use a skillful mean like what they all teach, method and technique, mind supreme method, to decondition the heedless thinking. Then after that, stabilize it through a method or a technique. So what he is teaching you is still a method and a technique. So all this you must understand. That's why you meditate, you understand. When people ask you to do anapanasati, what is it? Kong an, what is it? Chanting, what is it? What are you doing in the name of meditation? Is it just to chant? Then use the word that I say, chant until the mind and the chanting become one. These are words, understand now? You have to understand what these words are. Because when you are in sati, then it become one. That's why Pao, don't try to know until body and mind become one. Then the awareness that arises, the form and mind will know. That is what you're supposed to do. That is your understanding. Without that understanding, it becomes a method and a technique, thought-based. It kills you. Then you create another concept out of meditation. Oh, this one very good. Oh, I experience it. I find it very good. It's not about good and bad, understand? Meditation. Meditation is to understand. The moment you understand, no more problem. Suffering all gone. Because the moment you understand, you won't touch, you won't hold. Because you see the danger in all this. It's burning you, tormenting you. That is what wisdom is all about. It's no longer, oh, this method very good, that method very good, this teacher very good. You don't have to rely on anybody. You only rely on your own understanding. Okay? Yeah. Okay, yeah, Sadhu. Alicia got something. Oh, sorry, 6:13 already. Yeah. Okay, yeah, okay, okay.
Hello,
those who need to go can go.
Hello, Radio. Actually, 我想跟蒋辉刚才 Missy, 就是我在 Cameron Retreat 的时候，我在 Ralph 的时候，这一次也是 Ralph 的时候，他就是身口意全部在一个，就是好像一起就是那个，就是我们所讲的，我知道，我知道，啊，嗯，啊，sadhu，sadhu，sadhu，
very good。 When you understand, when you are in sati, everything is in sati, understand not? Rao for, nian for, zhou lu, sing, whatever activity, you are in sati. That's right. That mind state is very different. That mind state, most people need retreat condition to have the ability to be in that state. But the real cultivation is, in the midst of life, you can still be in that state of stability or sati. That is the real meditation. Well, if you cannot be in that state, means you are not heedful. If you are only heedful at the retreat, the moment you come out of retreat, go back to your normal life activity, you are completely back to square one. Heedless, most of the time. And the Buddha tell you very clearly, the heedless are as if dead. You don't stand a chance to awaken. Understand? So, sati, stability of it, not only in retreat condition, in your daily life. If you cannot have that, you are heedless. You don't stand a chance. That's why the satipatthana make it very clear. Sati sampajana. Mindfulness and clear comprehension of all action, all movement in the present moment. If you cannot do that, there is no way you can understand his teaching. Because the essential Dhamma can only arise when you are constantly aware. Means ever mindful, constantly meditative. This is Dhammapada verse 23. So always remember, you cannot be ever mindful and constantly meditative, you are not heedful. And if you only have this in the retreat condition, which is not bad, but it doesn't help much. Where the moment you come out into life, you cannot do it. And under retreat condition, where everything is so conducive, most of the time, the hindrance cannot arise, because they are all not tested. And because of the calm state, the tranquil setting, these are most of the time still suppressed.
where there is no condition for it to arise. You can only test it and find out in the midst of life, when you meet various type of people of very funny character, then experience life itself through its own intricate condition. Without coming out into society, you cannot put yourself to test, you cannot understand what this is. Then you cannot even find out whether you can be mindful in the midst of life or not. You can't do that. You still have not developed the real sati. Okay, we better end. Thank you so much for the question. Miss Lee and Mindy and also Alicia. Let us rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, let us share merits and transfer merits to all beings, starting with the devas. Akka satta cha bhumata devanaga mahindika punyang tang anumoditwa chirang rakantu lokasasana itta vata chamehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya idang me nyatinang hotu sukhita hontu nyatayo idang me nyatinang hotu sukhita hontu nyatayo idang me nyatinang hotu sukhita hontu nyatayo imina punyang kamina mame bala samagamo sattang samagamo hotu yava nivana patiya sadhu sadhu sadhu. Okay, pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha and Kuan Yin Bodhisattva and all the worthy ones. Then we end.